Southwest Loop 820 in Fort Worth, just west of the Chisholm Trail. Wall-to-wall TVs, awesome food, 29-degree draft beer, famous Twin Peaks girls, and there's these glasses with our faces on them. And free to you. You walk in, say, hey, I want one of those glasses. They'll be like, yeah, okay. Stop yelling at me. Right now, we're happy to welcome on the author of a book. He's actually at least one-third the author of this book. And this is Jason Stanford. He's on the Diamond Factory ticket hotline. How about that, Jason? You ever been on a Diamond Factory ticket hotline before?
I never even dreamed there was such a thing. This is a great honor.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. I read your book, and I love it, as I talked to you off the air last week about it a little bit. I finished it.
Great.
You worked on the final third of the book, and I told him that if I didn't like his writing in the final third, that I wouldn't call him this week.
Okay.
But I did.
Indicative that you did, yeah.
Yeah. So the book is called Forget the Alamo, and it's really interesting. It's also interesting in this time, Jake and I live in these school districts where they're trying to take books out or limit books.
Yep.
And this feels like a book that would be on the list of, I don't know if I'd want this in my school. In fact, you guys have had some book signings or events that have been canceled, right? Because of, I'm looking at one here from last July where a local museum there in Austin was going to have you guys out and talk about your book, but then that got canceled because of politics.
Yeah, well, that was actually two Julys ago. It was when our book was first coming out, and it was at the Bullock State History Museum. And they were all excited to have us on. It was just a Zoom thing. But before the book came out, they had arranged for us to be at a virtual book event. But as the book started to get attention, there are some folks in Austin who disagreed with it and thought it was a political attack. And they convinced the lieutenant governor to order the State History Museum to cancel our event. Because clearly, the State History Museum is no place to discuss state history.
Yeah, so it's really interesting because even the way the story presents that. So it's called Forget the Alamo, but what it basically is just the story of the Alamo. So if you said to somebody, you've got a blank page, go figure out the story of the Alamo. They did. They did tons of research, not in your section of the book, but it was the part with, let me see, the author. You guys wrote about Jeff Long. He was an author.
Yep.
Who was really stoked on Davy Crockett. So he was big into the Alamo. He grew up loving Davy Crockett and didn't really have an idea on what he wanted to write, but wanted to just learn as much as he could about the Alamo and then write a book.
Right.
And he looked into the Alamo's archives, because I guess all these papers are there, and found out a bunch of things that just didn't coincide with what he had been taught all growing up, correct?
Right, that's exactly right. We all think we know the story of the Alamo, that these folks were fighting tyranny and they were fighting for freedom and that they knowingly gave their lives to buy Sam Houston some time. And that's the story that's been told in Texas for more than 100 years. Also, for about 100 years, people have been trying to tell us that that isn't true. And there was no line in the sand. They didn't knowingly give up their lives. They tried to surrender twice. They weren't fighting for freedom. They were fighting so that they wouldn't have to obey the law of the land that was, it was Mexico at the time. So it doesn't take too long to pull the myth apart. What is more interesting to me is how the story has been enforced by politicians for more than 100 years.
Yeah. Up to this day. And the story was kind of invented right after it happened. It's the, us, the losers of the battle, said, well, we need to, to get back at these, to get exact revenge, we need to let's glorify this story to rally the people, because the people aren't going to be rallied by reality. And so you can kind of understand that. At the time. You can kind of understand why they would come up with that story to try to lead people to fight. But, you know, once it's 100 years past, 150, whatever it is now, it just seems silly to still be battling over what the story is.
But even before they came up with the story to motivate the Texian troops to revenge, to avenge the Alamo, it was to stave off panic, because all these people were escaping the advancing Mexican army, and the news that not only had the Alamo fallen, but everyone had been killed, meant that everyone in Santa Ana's way was going to get killed as a pirate, because this wasn't a war, this was a secessionist movement. They were trying to take land away from Mexico, which there are different rules of law, I mean, different rules of war there. And so Sam Houston had to turn the Alamo from a horrible, embarrassing military defeat. And he in fact ordered the Alamo to be evacuated, so this would never have happened. And then he turned this into a rallying cry, which we all know today as Forget the Alamo. I mean, Remember the Alamo. Sorry, the book is Forget the Alamo.
Yes, and you are Jason Stanford, one of the authors of Forget the Alamo. I always find it interesting when you get pushback on book signing events or on, you know, God forbid, getting this into a school or something like that, do people not understand that you and your co-authors have actually gone to the archives to prove these things out? Like, what is the nature of the pushback? Is there anything actually substantive about it, or is it just we just don't like the vibe of this? I don't know what they base that in.
So there is one, the most substantive pushback is that there were other states in rebellion against Santa Ana at the time, and they didn't have slavery there. So how can you say that Texas was in rebellion to preserve slavery? Well, Texas was the only republic of Texas, the only republic or state in Mexico that was trying to get independence. That was trying to split away. All these other states in rebellion were simply trying to reform the system to create to reinstate the 1824 Constitution. So it's settled law among credible historians that the Texas Revolution, or the revolt as we call it in the book, was primarily over slavery. And if you have to accept that, though, then that goes to undermine the credibility of the entire Texas myth, which goes to our identities as Texans, that we were founded in this incredible act of selfless bravery, which it turned out to be not incredibly true. So the pushback from the lieutenant governor, he called it a fact-free retelling of Texas history. They just brush aside the entire thing and say this is just a political attack.
Yeah, and even the story I read about that, which cites Dan Patrick there, is the first paragraph says it's a book examining the role slavery played leading up to the Battle of the Alamo. That's a very small part. It just seems like it's mentioned in there, like you said, and then you do need to accept that, and then you can go on. But that's not what the book is not 300 pages about how Texas loves slaves. But it's back, it's in there. But yeah, it's clearly not fact-free. A fact-free rewriting. The rewriting, this is interesting, the rewriting happened, you know, a long ago. And it's weird to me to term you or term the whole, you know, trying to tell the truth of the Alamo as the revisionist history. Like, it's we're just trying to find actual history, but they call you revisionist.
Exactly. And really, the book is about how the story has been revised all along. Let me give you one example. It was widely accepted at the time from eyewitness accounts that were written down that Davy Crockett was captured and or surrendered and was executed later that morning. Not terribly controversial at the time, until Walt Disney came around and made Davy Crockett the stoic American hero, and John Wayne went down swinging old Betsy with a rising mound of dead Mexican soldiers around him. Then it became politically unpopular to say that he that Davy Crockett surrendered and was executed later. That didn't conform to how people felt about Davy Crockett at the time. And so for more than two generations, it was widely accepted that Davy Crockett went down swinging old Betsy. And it wasn't until Billy Bob Thornton was executed in the 2004 movie that it really became okay again to talk about it. But even among Alamo heads, real smart people who study this a lot, they're just not ready to accept it. The imprint of the Walt Disney series on a generation of baby boomers can't be understated here. They are emotionally attached to this myth in a way that they're still holding on to these days. Dan Patrick, for example, has a scale model of the Alamo in his state office.
Okay. That's not weird.
Weren't your parents real stoked on that movie?
Oh, my mom was, again, Jason, I grew up in Texas. I'm 37, so I took Texas history twice. We had the Alamo on VHS. It was a big part of my upbringing. I just have a question from like the literary standpoint of how a book gets written with three authors. This is a bit off topic matter here, but so is it like a relay where one goes to two and two goes to three, or how do you actually write a book in thirds with two other people?
Yeah, that's a whole other show. So we divided up the research and we dug in deep in ours and we kept talking about it, so we knew that we were telling a coherent story all the way through. We agreed on a tone, and that took a lot of negotiation and pushing back and forth, and then we wrote it and tried to get the whole story similar. But then Brian Burrow, who's, you know, he has three New York Times bestsellers besides this one. He went and wrote over all of us, so it was he smoothed it all out. So it sounded like it was one book.
And your part was a lot. You did all the research on the Phil Collins collection. So Phil Collins is really stoked on the Alamo, and he started collecting Alamo items. But real collectors will scoff at his huge collection. And his huge collection was a big reason that the Alamo, they got some government money, some funds to build a new Alamo Museum and really change that whole thing. But, you know, without the Phil Collins selection, they probably wouldn't have gotten they probably wouldn't have gotten that money, right?
Well, yeah, and they really haven't gotten that much money now. But his collection, which at one time was considered to be the world's largest collection of Texas Revolutionary memorabilia, he was looking, it was in his basement in museum quality display cases in Switzerland, and he was looking for, he needed to get it out of the basement because he was thinking about moving to Florida or something like that. And he needed a place for it to go. So he was shopping his collection around looking for a museum, and he had one condition, that it all be displayed. And that's just not how museums work. But Jerry Patterson, who was the land commissioner at the time, big Alamo head, history buff, he thought, cool, we can do this. And according to he told me, and he's changed his story since then, but what he told me at the time and confirmed later to a fact checker is he told Phil Collins, put in the contract, when you give it to us, we have to start building a museum within 7 years. Well, that was 7 years ago. And right now, I mean, and that set in motion unprecedented cooperation between city and the state to get something done with the Alamo site. Because if you remember what it's actually like there, it's a pretty underwhelming historical site.
Oh, yeah. We've been there plenty. Yeah. And what was really interesting to me in your just fact-checking and a lot of debunking of a lot of his collection was that, like, one of the things was Jim Bowie's knife. And the way they used to confirm that it was Jim Bowie's knife, they did it with a psychic.
Yeah,
he said there was an overwhelming sadness associated with the knife. So.
Ever the reliable confirmation source.
I got to tell you, though, I've never really found a cheerful knife. So I'm not, you know, not sure how accurate that might have been.
Yeah, well, you can keep looking for one, and then the next book can be on that.
Yeah,
the Happy Knife.
Happy Knife by Jason Sanford. That'd be a great kid's book, yeah.
Well, Jason, thanks for joining us today. I just want to tell you, I love the book. It's a very interesting read, and I just like to, I don't know. I like things that reshape the way I was thinking about something. Like, man, I can't believe it's actually like this. So
I'm so glad to hear you say that. I'm really glad you liked the book, and thank you so much for having me on.
All right. This is the book is Forget the Alamo. And one of the three authors is Jason Stanford, so make sure if you buy the book that you know his name is on it.